Hey guys, just before we jump into the episode today, we would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which we record this podcast today. We pay our respects to the elders past and present, and we extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people here today. This episode is brought to you by the Psych Collaborative, our online psychology clinic bringing good quality, accessible therapy to you in the comfort of your own home. Hello, lovely besties. Welcome back to another episode. My name is Kat. I am a registered psychologist.
And I am a registered psychotherapist.
And what's your name?
It is me, Amy, the other half of the Psychology Sisters.
The old ball and chain. We are a podcast dedicated to normalizing the mental health conversation. Today, Ames, we are talking an amazingly powerful topic, talking all things infertility, and it's going to be a wonderful, insightful episode, we hope. But before we do get into that, talk to me. How's life? Give me the update. Give me the 411. How are you?
Well, thank you for asking. I'm good. Not to sound extremely boring by answering that question with good. I know before off mic, you're like, just give me another word. Give me, just say good one more time. Give me another word for good. I can't think of one. No, everything is good. I am similarly to what we were discussing last episode, just that end of year, feeling a little bit more tired, feeling a little bit more fatigued and run down and organizing things for the new year. But other than that, all things at coming up Millhouse. What about you, Kat? How have you been feeling?
Oh, I'm good, Ames. I feel the same as you in terms of can't find another word for good because brain is just gone. My brain has gone on holiday. Right. My brain has gone on holiday. My brain is not here. I have just had so many like stupid things that I have missed or done wrong in the last week because my brain is like, hey, like we're not here anymore. Like we've checked out of office is on, my friend. We're not here. So the rest of me is crawling to that finish line and I'm sure you feel the same. But I'm good. I'm good. Today, day of recording, it is the first day of December, which means it's getting very close to Christmas. So I'm very, very excited about that. I still feel quite frantic about it, but I'm very, very excited that Christmas
Love that chaotic energy.
Oh, I feel like every episode is just hurricane of chaos. But I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good. Give me your pit and peak of the week.
Okay, so pit and peak of the week. My pit is very first world minor, mild inconvenience, but it is a pit nevertheless. My pit is absolutely, it is the 1st of December, which is the first day of summer, and it definitely doesn't feel like summer. And I feel like this is playing tricks. It's playing tricks on my brain because about a month ago, it was sunny and the weather was really feeling like it was warming up and I was getting excited. I was getting so excited. And it's like summer's just never coming. So I keep waiting to be like, yay, you know, it's sunny and I can go to the beach. But we have had 3 weeks of rain and gloomy grey days. And now it feels like more wintry than it does summer. And that is just something that has felt a little bit off, a little bit blur. Because it's like I'm expecting or I have that anticipatory excitement for summer and it has just not come. So strange. Very strange regarding the weather. And my peak. What is my peak?
I know the peak. The peak, we've discussed this, and it's something that Amy did not want to bring up, but I think we need to celebrate this, Amy. Amy Hudson, tell me your amazing peak, something that's just happened just this morning, hot off the press, I would say.
Okay, well, my peak is actually that I was really, really strong with Black Friday and Cyber Monday sales.
Oh, I have congrats. Been, yeah, that's hard to do.
This is going to be my small win. This is going to be my peak. And then we can mutually celebrate the other peak together because it's a shared peak, both of us. So, yeah, my peak is that I practiced really, really good self-control and I wasn't impulsive around Black Friday and Cyber Monday sales. I was able to kind of stick to my goals that are, you know, short-term pain, long-term gain kind of thing. And I was a little bit proud of myself, a little bit chuffed with myself for doing that. Don't get me wrong, there were still some purchases, but it wasn't like fully blown out of the water like previous times might have been. So I was proud of myself for that. Kat, beautiful, lovely. Dear Kat, what is your pit and peak of the week?
Well, let's rewind to that huge win, Ames. Not small win. I think that's huge. Considering that we were inundated, like, did you feel the same? Emails. I got, okay.
Text messages. How did you get
Where did this come from? I swear, every like 10 minutes last Friday, ding, ding.
Bombarded.
And I was like, oh my God, I've never been so popular in my life. Like, wow. Because I was with clients and I was like, oh my God, we have so many text messages. Like, something good has happened or something not so good has happened. And I just had this like mutual kind of smug feeling like, oh my God, like I feel so popular today. It's bloody Kogan. It's bloody eBay. It's all of the shopping. And yeah, it was inundated. I felt Yeah,
don't come
attacked.
At me flower power with your 30% off.
Yeah. I felt personally victimized by those like Friday sales, but huge win.
I'm sending you a message. I'm like, I'm weak.
Yeah, I'm drowning. I am not okay, but a huge win, Ames. That is really definitely not an easy thing to do considering you probably had a lot of temptations. I think everyone did around. And bloody hell, Cyber Week continues. How is it still going? Like, I just want it all to be over.
Please
just
stop.
Let this be over. And I think it's exacerbated by that it hasn't been the best weather. So there's not been much else to do, right? Like you said, just maybe sit on your phone or scroll online shop. So I feel your girlfriend, but kudos. Huge win. That is amazing that you're able to
Thank you
exercise some self-control. Not an easy thing to do for sure. Pit and peak. My pit would be, yes, I'm going to have a mutual pit with you in that this rain. Yeah, look, I am very happy that there's no bushfires. I'm very happy it's not dry. I know it could be worse, but yeah, I'm just about ready. I'm a bit over it. I'm a bit done. I'm a bit done, sorry, with Nina. I really am keen for some sunshine. I have some of my clients live in hot temperaments, and I am so jealous. I'm always like, so tell me, how does the heat feel? Oh, is that sunshine? Can you show me what your backyard looks like? Mm-hmm. So I am living vicariously through all my very lucky clients who are experiencing a bit more sunshine. But yeah, I'm feeling that disappointment, Ames. Ready for summer. It doesn't feel like summer, hey. It feels like winter, but just the days are a bit longer.
Absolutely. It's actually cold today. I think it's like 14 degrees. Yeah. What is this?
I don't know. I don't know. Seasonal affective disorder, my friend. That's what this is. And my peak is something very exciting. Amy and I, on our beautiful Psychology Sisters Instagram, which we started 2 years ago, I think, two and a bit years ago, we set ourselves a goal when we were very new, fresh little bright-eyed, naive therapist sitting on the floor of my kitchen saying, what should our goals be for the next few years? And one of them was to reach 10,000 followers on Instagram, which is what we have done this morning. And it's made me so proud of just having a bit of a moment that you and I have been through so much in the last 2 years. And it may seem small to everyone else, but to us it is absolutely huge and such a milestone. Our little Instagram started off very small and is now slowly
just
growing.
A young spring chicken
is just developing more. We have such a beautiful community on there. And we're so proud of what we have created, and props to Ames, I think, overall over the last year. You have taken over that Instagram and you are on that and monitoring it and putting up amazing posts and reels. And yeah, just huge props, just a huge thanks to everyone who follows us on Instagram. We are so lucky to have you. So thank you for all the support. We are so stoked. Our little business is doing so well.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there a pit, an individual pit?
No. For you, my pit is just rain, go away.
Oh, sorry, peak. Sorry, is there an individual peak?
Peak. No, I'm feeling really good this week. That's not really a peak. It's more just a mood thing, but no, I feel like every single week this year I've felt so overwhelmed and so frazzled. And this week I'm still overwhelmed, but not as overwhelmed as I have been. And that's a really nice feeling to have a bit of downtime and chillax time. So no, I'm feeling really good. That would be my peak, is that I'm just really bloody excited for Christmas, whether it's rain, hail or shine, just to have some time off. So really crawling towards the finish line though. Like the brain's gone. body's still here trying to do the work. But yeah, very excited for that to be here.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful.
Why do I feel so awkward?
No, no, why is this awkward?
Why is this awkward?
Without further ado, lovely listeners, this week's episode does come with a trigger warning. I think as we dive into the psychological impacts of infertility, if this is a little bit of a sensitive topic, if this is something that you are experiencing and maybe it doesn't feel safe to continue listening, please feel free to skip this episode. We will be discussing the challenges individuals face and how it impacts couples. We also give our two cents on how to support loved ones, as well as some general tips if this is something that maybe you have experienced or continue experiencing. So without further ado, let us dive into the psychological impacts of infertility.
Yes, great topic, Ames. I think this is such an interesting one for not just women or those who identify as women, but everyone. I think everyone, you know, experiences infertility or knows someone who has experienced infertility. I thought this was such an important topic. Ames, you suggested this and I thought it was such a wonderful thing to bring to the table, because often it's such a silent struggle, isn't it, infertility? It's not one that is really often spoke about. So before we delve into the psychological impacts of fertility or infertility, talk to me, Ames, talk to me what infertility is.
Great, great question. I think absolutely this is such a timely conversation coming up to the holidays. And as you mentioned, it is can be a little bit of a silent struggle, often being surrounded by family and friends. For those experiencing infertility, can be a lot of additional stress and pressure really leading up to the Christmas holidays. So I think this is a really timely conversation too, because it does bring on a plethora of additional stress. Like, am I going to be missing treatments? Am I going to be, you know, delayed in hearing results? Am I going to be seeing unfamiliar specialists because my regular specialist was on holidays? Feeling conflicted, sharing holiday excitement with, you know, pregnant family members or friends or young children that are really excited around Christmas, and being reminded of what we don't have. Maybe the costs of infertility coming up here as an added stress to this holiday celebration, in quotation marks. And above all, it is the feeling of never being able to escape your infertility. I think that often comes up as a major chronic stress, is that it is just constantly there. So I guess that is just another reason why we thought this topic in particular at this time, it might be a really important conversation to have. So absolutely, what is infertility? So an official diagnosis is usually defined. Now, I would like to preface this by saying I am not a fertility specialist and I'm also not a doctor. So Kat and I's understanding of infertility is really just around the psychological and emotional impacts that it has. But official diagnosis is defined as not being able to conceive 12 months or longer of having unprotected sex. If you are a female over 25 years of age, specialists will diagnose from a period of 6 months due to age-related fertility decline. It's really important to reiterate that barriers of fertility can exist in both male and female people. So it's often said that the couple is experiencing infertility rather than just the woman or just the man. So this is not just a female issue. It's equal across the board. Although I think absolutely that there is a lot of stigma for females that definitely exists, and it's often seen as more of a female issue. But I think absolutely there is an impact on both sides, and we can get into that a little bit later. But it's also really prevalent. And I think it's interesting that it is often seen as something that we suffer with in silence, because it is estimated that one in six couples have difficulty conceiving. And males account for just under half of infertility cases that are reported and treated. So one in 35 men will have fertility issues, whilst one in 25 males are thought to suffer from a low sperm count. Women make up for around 40% of all treated infertility cases in Australia. So females over the age of 35, like I said before, can have age-related fertility issues, and men obviously don't have that. So I think that maybe accounts for where we might see a little higher in percentage there. But in the remainder of cases, there are combined reasons, meaning that there are both male and female issues with fertility. I think that's important to note.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really good point.
So Kat, where do you see, I guess, working with clients or understanding how infertility impacts us emotionally and psychologically, what do you tend to notice around infertility?
Yeah, great question. I think really going, circling back to that, it is such a silent struggle, right? I really think that in my research and in my work with women or men, or even, you know, those same-sex couples, that it is something that people struggle with silently. And I think it's something that may not be really talked about because there is still that stigma surrounding infertility. I think those who do suffer from infertility or struggle to fall pregnant may feel, you know, feeling like a failure or feeling like inherently flawed or something's wrong with them. And by proxy, what that might look like in social situations or in situations around family, as you mentioned, Christmas is a really strong trigger, I think, for those who are struggling with infertility, that it feels as though, like, well, I don't want to talk about it. There's maybe some shame around it. I feel really low about it. And often infertility can really lead to withdrawal of I don't really want to speak about this, or I'm feeling ashamed, or I don't know how to talk about this even. So I think that's a really a perpetuating factor here, is that often those struggling with infertility don't often speak about it. And I guess what that can look like as well is that makes it seem not normalized if I guess people around you aren't speaking about it openly. I mean, one in six aims isn't, it's pretty big number. I mean, we all know at least six couples, and if one of those couples, struggles with falling pregnant, then I wonder how many others there must be. So it doesn't seem to be a really normalized thing to speak about, or it feels maybe a bit taboo if you know of people trying to get pregnant or they're struggling. There seems to be this hesitation of, oh, what do we say? Do we talk to them about it? They not want to talk about it. Maybe we won't talk about it. And that increases the feeling of taboo and stigma, right? That it's not really spoken about. There's some discomfort, isn't there, around infertility. So I think the consequences of infertility are certainly very diverse and can affect so many different people or couples differently. And they can certainly are characterized by intense personal suffering. Infertility has actually been linked with increasing vulnerability to developing a mood or anxiety disorder. I think as well, something to note here when speaking about some of the psychological side effects or the psychological impacts of infertility is that it's quite pathologized, infertility. Like, there seems to be, it's a very, you know, it certainly is a medical diagnosis as well as a psychological diagnosis, but it seems to be a lot more pathologized in the way that it's maybe the psychological impacts or emotional responses to infertility are often overlooked. They're maybe not spoken about. It's more focused on the medical or biological side of things. And that can be really difficult for couples or individuals who are trying to fall pregnant to face, right? Like if my health professionals and medical professionals are not really talking about the psychological impacts, then maybe I should be okay about it, or maybe what I'm feeling is silly, right? There seems to be some maybe dismissal or not as important to speak about those psychological impacts, which can leave people feeling really isolated and really alone when they're struggling with infertility. So common effects might look like distress, anger at ourselves, anger at our body, anger at our partner, something like a feeling of a loss of control over the plan that you might have had or the situation, identity confusion, identity loss for those who you know, were really excited or felt that being a parent was part of their identity, often the struggles to fall pregnant can inhibit that or impact on that parental, you know, desire. Something like depression, as we spoke about before, anxiety certainly can come up. Problems within the relationship, often infertility breeds some frustration, some of that anger, and that can create some resentment in a couple. Because I think the interesting with infertility is often it's you kind of find out where the issues are stemming from, and that can be really difficult to cope with feeling as though you're the one to blame or there's something wrong with you that's impacting on the ability to get pregnant for either side of the couple. That's a really tough thing to cope with in a relationship. It can impact on sex lives. You know, you can certainly go from maybe sex for pleasure and love to sex for pregnancy, and that can certainly impact on the relationship as well. Something else that can pop up are body image concerns or body esteem concerns of there's something wrong with me or my body, and that can be really, really distressing on someone. You know, also something like social isolation is a big one that people may face when suffering infertility, so or experiencing infertility. So what do you think, Ames? Anything to add on to those things?
Absolutely, Kat. Thank you so much for that comprehensive explanation of the different psychological impacts that can come up. And I think the collective experience of all of those stresses means that it is also quite traumatic. So this doesn't mean that everyone who experiences infertility will be traumatized, but the experience is traumatic. So it is overwhelming and disabling psychological stress related to the experience of loss, of chronic stress that makes it quite a traumatic ongoing event. So the trauma responses can produce fear, powerlessness, hopelessness, as well as anger and isolation, and absolutely shame, guilt, all of those things around self and identity and, you know, feeling like this is something that I should just naturally be able to do and I can't, so what's wrong with me? And, yes, social isolation, all of those things that you mentioned, Kat. So it's quite common that couples experiencing infertility will experience that prolonged stress, anxiety, and depression. And often by the time people seek psychological support, they've already been through so much, which means that we can often see symptoms of PTSD as well. And there have been more studies on women generally than on men. So most studies report that women in particular experience women that have experienced high risk pregnancies, pregnancy loss, and infertility will show more symptoms of things like panic attacks and sleep disturbance that are associated with PTSD, and really think about their experience in relation to low self-esteem and feelings of social isolation. So studies show that women experience their lack of fertility as a central theme in their lives and are unable to move forward with a lot of things, a lot of life transitions, and will continue to grieve this loss. So absolutely, like you were saying, Kat, it's a huge journey of loss, really. It's devastating. It's loss of hope for what you imagined your experience of starting a family to be like, loss of what motherhood was going to be like for you, or what fatherhood was going to be like for you, or supposed to be like. And it's also this feeling of being ripped off and being really angry at that something's been taken away from you without that control. You know, loss of esteem and identity. You know, and often these losses aren't obvious, even for those going through infertility. And it is a real feeling of, that loss of control, and then that increasing feeling of all I want, the biggest thing that I want, which can be just so frustrating and defeating, and feeling like, you know, that often the answers given are really medical answers, which feel really disempowering, and that can be really hard to go through as well. And we can get into grief, I guess, a little bit later, but through all of those, you know, feelings of loss, it really creates this continuous grief, which can be a real chronic life stressor for many couples experiencing infidelity and stress arising from the feeling of failure to achieve desired goals. One study highlighted the long-term psychological effects of stress related to reproductive problems is comparable to psychological impact of long-term disease. So this thing that you are battling constantly, which can be, feel like a constant crisis, essentially, which can create a real trauma response. So infertility is often experienced as a significant or chronic stressor in our lives, just like a traumatic event.
Yeah, and repeated exposure to chronic stresses may develop into some trauma. And yeah, you're right, PTSD is certainly something that can arise. And I think the confusion and the conflict here is, well, if it's not spoken about, if it's really medicalized or pathologized, if there isn't that kind of social narrative or social norm around talking about infertility, then why should I be feeling like this? I shouldn't be feeling like this, or, I should be okay, because there isn't that social support or even that really medical support, right? So I think that can create quite a lot of conflict for those experiencing infertility, because, there's no, for example, something like anxiety. It's like, okay, yeah, we understand anxiety and this is what you need to do when you experience anxiety. But something like infertility, it is that silence. It's that really silent struggle. And so, but with such adverse impacts, and I think that must leave couples feeling so isolated and so confused, that it's not spoken about, or I should be fine, we should be able to cope with this. No one else goes through it. So therefore, or my doctor didn't bring it up with me, or my specialist didn't bring it up with me. So I feel silly, or I feel like I'm being, I'm exaggerating how I'm feeling. Right. And that can really create so much confusion for those going through the infertility process.
I was just going to say, absolutely. And I think that really leads into shame, which is a really painful challenge that can come up. And this will be very unique to each individual or couple experiencing infertility. So, for example, couples or individuals that have strong family value or certain religious affiliations, where it's really ingrained in our identity and, how good you are, and I guess your purpose, that can be something that can have an enormous burden when experiencing infertility. So really looking at shame as a really excruciating experience that can come up. So when someone is experiencing infertility, it then becomes a wrongness about me. Yeah, something that this is really difficult to move through, but this is something inherently bad about me, and having really negative beliefs about self as a defectiveness or an inadequacy that comes up. And absolutely questioning their bodies not functioning, or questioning, what have I done wrong in my life that this has happened to me? That can be something that can be really, really difficult to grapple with. And I think too, there can also be shame around how you feel towards family and friends that are able to conceive. So when I feel jealous, when I feel envious, when I feel angry that it happens so easily for other people and not for me, shame about, well, what kind of person does that make me that I then feel that way towards you? And I think that means one thing, that you're human, because it is such a complex, difficult experience to go through. And naturally, when we are so desperately longing for something that feels so out of our control, we experience normal human emotions like jealousy and envy and anger. But absolutely, there is a lot of shame that comes with infertility.
Yeah, and that the trigger of seeing other people being able to experience pregnancy and falling pregnant, that is a difficult another thing to sit with, because you're right, you feel like, oh, I should be supportive, I should be happy, I what kind of person and what kind of friend am I for being jealous or envious or angry or resentful of my friend or this person that I know. But yeah, as Aim said, it's really normal to feel that if you have, you know, not been so lucky or you haven't been able to fall pregnant and you've been really struggling, and it's so out of your control sometimes, that to see someone else with that and be able to do that thing that you so desperately want, of course it's so natural to feel jealousy and envy and resentment and anger. And yeah, it certainly doesn't make you a bad person, as Aim said. It just makes you human. And I think that's one thing that people get really stuck on, isn't it? It's, oh, I want to be happy for my friend or whoever it might be, but I can't, or I really struggle with that. You know, I don't want to be a bad person. And yeah, we really want to empathize here and emphasize it certainly doesn't make you a bad person.
I think that's definitely a bit of a rut that we can feel trapped in, should I just quit hanging out with my friends if I'm feeling this way? Should I just stop seeing people? Because one of two things happen. Either we feel like we just can't say anything, that silence that you've mentioned, Kat, or it feels like, am I, you know, so preoccupied with my infertility? Yeah, are my friends so invested in my infertility that I feel like I've got a big capital I on my forehead and everyone asks me about it? You know, how is everything going? What's your latest appointment been like? So there's this, you know, this constant reminder. And I think that can be really challenging too, figuring out what you want to do about social supports, whether it is, you know, I would like people to not ask, and, you know, maybe I just leave the updates up to me where, you know, and we can kind of talk about tips and things like that later. But absolutely, I think falling into that social rut of this complex bag of emotions and thoughts around feeling jealous and envious and angry and then feeling alone and isolated and defective, it's a lot of complex, conflicting experiences that can be quite shame inducing.
Yeah, and you're right, with those social supports, if you're feeling that jealousy or envy or any of those other feelings that naturally will come up, a natural instinct might be to isolate yourself from that friend or from your friendship group, because you think, oh my gosh, I don't want to be a downer. I don't want people to feel sorry for me. I don't want to pity. I don't want to have that capital I on my forehead. So you know what? It's so uncomfortable. I don't, you know, I'll just take myself out of the situation, or I might not want to see this, you know, group as much, or this social support as much. And so you can see how that continues to perpetuate the isolation and loneliness. And, you know, we know that isolation and disconnect from others, you know, can make you more vulnerable to developing, you know, any mental health concerns. So when you are taking yourself out of that situation for whatever reason, I mean, it's, of course, it's a normal response to withdraw socially, but it's one that actually may have some more negative impacts than anticipated, because we'll get into this in a second, but social connection and support is so, so important for when you're going through something like infertility. And yeah, I think you can see how, you know, you can withdraw so easily from the things that usually do help with your mental health from that. So it's interesting, Ames, I want to circle back to, you mentioned culture, and I was really interested when researching this, which, by the way, I don't know if you felt the same when researching this. Suddenly I'm getting all these targeted ads. Have you noticed that? Like, no. I've been getting like targeted Instagram ads on Facebook, all this infertility stuff. And that must be so difficult. I'm thinking, I just did an hour of research this morning and I'm getting all these targeted ads. Imagine if you're going through infertility and you're seeing this all the time. This must be quite consuming. Like, I wonder if other people have felt like this. I just did this for an hour and I'm getting inundated with IVF specialists, with apps and all of these things. And that's wonderful. It's great to have that support, but it really must just be, I wonder if it's quite triggering for people.
Part of the chaos, isn't it? That part of the, I guess, the consuming, never-ending part of infertility is that it's constant research, treatments, appointments, specialists, you know, what to do next, Absolutely. I couldn't imagine what that would feel like.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that kind of saturated advertising reminders, right? Like it might act, it's another reminder that I'm struggling, or I'm inadequate, or I'm a failure. Like I just wonder the impact on those ads have on those going through infertility. Sorry, going back to, yes, culture. So I was interested to see if there was an impact on shame around something like a collectivist culture versus an individualistic culture, because collectivist cultures generally tend to have a higher priority or in place a higher value on pregnancy, and I guess that very female motherly role versus maybe more individualistic cultures. So there was a 2013 study which studied, you know, essentially the impact of shame or social support of women and couples experiencing infertility, as well as exploring the psychological impacts on social and cultural stigma for women in those collectivist cultures. So this study compared women from both Iran and Sweden and found that the women from the Iranian sample were at a higher risk of developing a mood disorder than those from Sweden. So researchers felt that this might be due to the different cultural expectations, that perhaps infertility might have been more stigmatized in those more collectivist cultures such as Iran. Like there was a much higher value on getting pregnant and bearing offspring and carrying on those genes versus those in the more individualistic cultures such as Sweden. And it's interesting, they found with the Iranian sample that women withdrew from their social support network a lot more, maybe due to that shame, the stigma of like this is not, you know, the norm, this is not the plan, I should be able to, you know, bear children or fall pregnant. And so there was a much higher risk of developing a mood disorder because of that social withdrawal versus those in Sweden who continued to reach out for support from their friends. The Swedish sample reported they didn't feel as much stigma or as much judgment than compared to the Iranian women, which is really interesting. And I think if you're someone who does have, you know, are part of a culture which puts a much higher priority on bearing children or having children, falling pregnant, then I wonder if this might have a different impact on you versus, you know, another family or culture where children are, you know, maybe anticipated but not expected. And I just think it goes to show the impact on culture and also the social support on those going through infertility, and not just for women. I mean, I think, Ames, you're right. This research is really skewed at women. It's very heteronormative as well. It really focuses on
a woman's role.
Yeah, a woman's role, but also, you know, different sex couples. It really, there's not a lot. I tried to really understand the impact of infertility on LGBTQI couples or individuals going through this process, and there really wasn't a lot of research, which, I mean, that's another barrier, right? Like I can imagine that infertility is a struggle, but imagine being part of the LGBTQI community or a same-sex couple who's, you know, I wonder if there'd be, you know, more dependence on the fertility treatment such as IVF, much maybe more expensive, maybe less social support, or maybe not as spoken about. I wonder with the LGBTQI community, you know, infertility. And I was reading as well a case study where a same-sex couple was really struggling with getting support in Australia, and they found that a lot, even the paperwork was really heteronormative, that it was more, there was a kind of a section on the paperwork when they were going for IVF or artificial insemination, I can't remember, but it was like dad's name, dad's role, dad's job versus mum's job. Like it was really quite discriminatory still in this day and age. So I know infertility is such a difficult thing and distressing thing to work through, but I can imagine being part of the community, the LGBTQI community or a same-sex couple would have that increased complexity and increased barriers. So it's a real struggle for so many different population types.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I think that is a really good point to acknowledge, that those different barriers for different communities and cultures on top of what is already a really painful and stressful experience.
Yeah. So obviously when going through something like infertility, what you likely will experience is grief and loss of, you know, the plan that you had, loss of the life before trying for a baby, for example, or just loss of, yeah, the child that you want or the baby that you want, the life that you want with your partner. I think grief and loss can really pop up in so many different ways. And I think it's certainly something that those suffering with infertility might be able to relate to, is that the grief cycle, right? Grief and loss when going through infertility. So Ames, talk to me about what people who are going through infertility might feel on that grief cycle or those grief stages.
Absolutely. So infertility is very complex, and it is devastating loss. It is the, like I said before, the journey of loss, or not to use the J word, but it is a real process of loss. And we often move through grief, which is a normal response to painful loss. So just like losing a loved one or losing something really meaningful to us can come as a shock, in the same way the realization of infertility comes as a shock. So it's, I think there are few people, obviously there are exceptions, but very generally speaking, there are few people that expect to have these challenges or to experience infertility. So it can have a profound impact on a couple's life in the same way that death can. And I think that's really important to understand. So infertility grief is not as recognized. So when we explain grieving the loss of someone, like a death in the family or death of someone really important to us, that's quite obvious. A lot of people can relate to that. I think grief is really challenging when it comes to infertility because it's not as widely understood, yet it's prevalent, yet it's common, like we're saying. But grief over the loss of, what you imagined or future, grief is something that you want really bad, grief is something that you've lost that's really important to you that you don't have control over. And much like all grief, it doesn't move quickly. It takes a really long time, and it takes a lot of sitting and understanding the various stages of grief. Going through the first stage of maybe experiencing denial, maybe really finding it quite difficult to come to terms with that you're facing infertility challenges, especially because it probably would come as a huge shock. Yeah, and sometimes couples can experience things like blame, not always. Other couples can experience increased bonding as something that you're going through together, but it can be really difficult if that's something that comes up, and it is a natural part of processing grief, because naturally when something really devastating and really awful happens, we want to make sense of it. We want answers. We might experience things like anger. Yeah, feeling really angry at the loss of control, feeling really angry that this is an unfair thing that's happened, and it is. Yeah, so that can really show up, and it can be really, really difficult for many people experiencing grief from the news of infertility, that there is almost like an unwillingness to accept that this is something that I'm going through. So it is that know that it must be something else. That can also be a really, really challenging part of moving through grief. And I guess often, again, this is another challenge that can come up, not for everyone, but for some people. Infertility can be especially difficult to move through grief when everyone around you is falling pregnant. Oftentimes we will be at an age where all of our friends around us are at a similar stage in life where they're trying for babies, having baby showers, falling pregnant, Instagram feeds of picture-perfect pregnancies. So there is a lot of, like I said before, complex emotions, helplessness that really shakes you at your core while you're trying to process your own grief and loss. So grief and loss can be really, really difficult for someone experiencing infertility to go through. And I know I've talked about, I guess, the initial phase of grief that a couple might experience moving through infertility. What have you got more for us, Kat, on grief and infertility?
All right. So, yeah, Ames, that was really well put, is that, those stages of grief or loss that we experience. And I want to note here that it's not grieving or feeling loss is never linear. And I think particularly grief from infertility is non-linear as well. So I think an interesting, not a conundrum, but a what's the word I'm looking for? Interesting contradiction, I would say, that people experience with their infertility cycles is that there is both the highs of the hope and the lows of the loss. And I think the high highs and the low lows creates, quite a lot of distress, you know, that it may have an impact on our normal way of grieving in that, there could be something here, or we could be pregnant, or, you know, there's some positives here. And then you've got the low lows. And I think it's interesting to note that the grief cycle with infertility is there seems to be a lot of loss, right? Like there's a lot of losses in a short amount of time. And that's really excruciating to bear. Another stage that couples or individuals hoping to conceive might go through is bargaining. So bargaining is a stage of loss or grief where you try and make deals with God or a higher power. You know, if I just do this, if I just stop stressing, or if I just fix this, if I go to that specialist, then maybe it will happen, right? It's a very natural, inherent way to maintain or seek some control over a situation that feels so out of control sometimes. Something that might come up as well when you're moving through the grief cycle is depression. So those really low moods, the flat affects of, you know, where you start to just lose hope, right? It's characterized by hopelessness. And I think the whole infertility process is characterized by sometimes feelings of hopelessness for some people. But that those moods or those low states can be characterized as depression, because if you feel really low, you know, when you're trying and trying again, you've got all these appointments, you've got maybe your IVF cycles, or, you know, you're trying to conceive naturally, those lows feel really low. And I think it's interesting is that the losses can compound and the grief can deepen. And I think that it's a really unique way to experience grief, because it's not just one loss. It feels like a lot of losses, and I think it compounds, right? And something that's interesting to note is that often the narrative, if you know, you're a couple or individual hoping to fall pregnant, and maybe you do fall pregnant, is that there's this expectation that you'll just forget about all the other stuff, that you'll forget about that really difficult time, you know, the years, the months, whatever it might be, of trying to fall pregnant and going through those grief cycles consistently. It's almost like, okay, good. Like, you've got what you wanted. You're pregnant. Great. But no one ever talks about that. That grief is still there. Just because it maybe never went to a pregnancy, the grief exists regardless. And I think a lot of parents may still have a lot of those low depression moods or any of that grief or loss within them that hasn't really been, you know, hasn't had a chance to breathe or a chance for an outlet, because there's an expectation, perhaps medically, I can imagine, of, oh good, you're pregnant, great, you're happy now, like you should be, everything's fine. But it's like, well, what about the years or months we've just spent going through all of this? And and that might create some guilt as well, or shame, because it's like, I should be happy. And I'm sure maybe that's a normal expression or response, is I'm happy and I'm relieved and I'm still nervous about maybe the next 9 months. But what about all these feelings that are still there from the last few years of trying to get pregnant and the losses? So I think that's interesting to note, is often that side of things isn't often talked about or given a chance to, or given space.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is a really good point to make, that even when it is that you finally do conceive, how much fear and anxiety from residue of what you experience. Again, that trauma response of being in that prolonged, chronic, stressed state and feeling like, because, you know, you have been waiting so long. It's kind of like that paradox of constantly moving but feeling like life is put on pause, or life is waiting for test results, waiting for procedures, waiting for a pregnancy. So it feels like you're bouncing between all of these different things, and everything else becomes secondary. And when I finally have that, oh, the fear, the stress of anything then happening, anything else then happening.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And then everything else that's happened in the lead up to that would be really, really stressful.
Yeah. I think across all parties as well. I think for both parts of the couple, if you're in a couple or if you're on your own, but I think more looking at those couple dynamics that, infertility affects both just as significantly, right? It may be stigmatized to be more female driven, but I think certainly for men, if it is a heteronormative relationship, or the other couple, the other side, you know, if you are in a same-sex relationship or a part of the LGBTQI community, that the other, you know, the other half of that couple still really struggles. You know, it's not just a one-sided struggle. I think for both parts, it's a really difficult thing to cope with in infertility, and so much, I guess, also how it shows up in the relationship, right? Like, it can really cause so much distress in those relationships, and can often be a reason why maybe some relationships do end, because it's really difficult. Like, the anger, the blame, resentment sometimes can come up, the social withdrawal, a lot more dependence on our partner, that can really have such an impact on that relationship.
Absolutely. I think there are a few relationships that aren't impacted by infertility because it is a major source of stress and it feels like a never-ending life crisis. Mm-hmm. I think generally speaking, what can come up is a difference in pace. So maybe a different pace in how each individual in the couple is moving through grief and loss or processing the diagnosis of infertility. Typically speaking, males in general tend to move quicker because they tend, very generally speaking, to have more of a pragmatic approach than females. And this can be a real point of tension in couples because it can feel like one person isn't understanding what it's like for the other, or it can feel like one person doesn't care as much as the other. So that difference in pace can be a real point of conflict. And I think also this will impact individuals so differently. So the individual's coping can also impact their partner. So for example, meaning-based coping can decrease male stress, generally speaking. However, when males cope by creating new meaning, it can actually increase females' relational distress, which can, again, be a real point of conflict. And as you mentioned before, Kat, couples can experience difficulty around sex. So when life has become a constant preoccupation with when am I ovulating, we need to have sex at this time, routines around when I'm most fertile, absolutely, how we feel about our body, all of those types of things can really impact sex. Sex life can often decrease because of the stress around these routines and dips in self-esteem and performance, because it was once a source of, you know, desire and emotional connection and bonding and joy, now becomes a source of frustration and failure. So there can be a lot of complexity around sex, and something that can be helpful is separating sexy time and, you know, love making from baby making to stay connected during infertility treatment, because that can be a major sticking point as well. And again, how we grieve. So each individual in the couple will grieve differently too. So this can be another point of tension. If I tend to withdraw when I'm going through grief versus if my partner is quite angry and needs to vent, that can create some major conflict in how we communicate and how we respond and react towards each other too.
Or even that if there was one part of the couple that isn't reacting as much as you would, like maybe the other part of the couple is, like, why aren't you upset or why aren't you disappointed about this? You know, maybe there is that yeah, that disconnect there of the reactions might be different, but one of the reactions might actually be disconnect, or, you know, maybe one half of the couple feels they need to be the strong one, the stoic one, the I'll look after you, it's okay. And that can be quite frustrating maybe on the other, or maybe devalidating for the other half of the couple that feels like, why aren't you sad like I am? Why aren't you feeling like that? And can really perpetuate those feelings of loneliness like we spoke about. Like, am I crazy for feeling like this? Why am I so sad, or why am I so angry? Or, you know, so often, yeah, the partner can respond very differently, the same or not at all. And either way is very, very difficult.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we might move into how to help someone. So we've got rough general tips on both how to support someone you know who might be experiencing challenges with infertility, and also a little bit later on tips if this is something that you are going through. So Kat, what are some of your top tips on how to help someone you know?
Yeah, so this is a really great question, and I think we had that in the question box near me on Instagram, someone wanting to know how to support someone, which is wonderful that you are asking and that people are wanting to know, because it's such a delicate and complex thing to support a friend with. So firstly, I think acknowledging that their infertility may feel like a loss to them. It may feel like grief. It may feel like loss. And acknowledging for them that this is a really difficult time. I think acknowledging that they are maybe grieving and going through their own journey, and be led by them with how much they want to open up or not. You know, I think showing interest and asking is wonderful, but if you notice that maybe that they're not wanting to open up or not really wanting to go there, then respecting that, you know, they may not want to speak about it, and that's okay. And as a friend or as a support, it can feel quite helpless if the person that you know is struggling with infertility doesn't want to open up, because it can make us feel like, oh, what's really going on? Are they okay? And may provoke us to want to seek control and figure out if they're okay. So it's being led by them, acknowledging their loss, but also knowing that if they don't want to speak about it, it's okay. And maybe showing support in other ways. Maybe if it's just spending time with them, maybe it's quality time together, maybe it's, you know, a gift, maybe it's putting something at their door, maybe it's just a text message, anything that can be unrelated to the infertility. Those things can be really helpful when speaking to a friend. I think another thing to note is just really being mindful of what you say to them, choosing your words quite carefully. There are some things that can be said that often aren't very helpful to people experiencing infertility. So it's really natural to want to make people feel better. That is our natural way of being avoidant of discomfort, of seeing our friend or person that we know feel sad or uncomfortable. So I think something like, everything happens for a reason, or you can always try for another one, there's always next time, or, you know, at least you didn't fall pregnant, like it, you know, for, no, sorry, Sam, cut that last bit about at least you didn't fall pregnant, you know, just better luck next time. There's only so much you can do. That narrative can be really difficult to hear if you're someone who's really struggling with infertility. You know, you may be trying to be comforting or positive and uplifting, but sometimes comments like this can sound quite dismissive, and as though you're not really taking it seriously. So I think just be mindful of that, the narrative of it's all good, better luck next time. To more, I'm really sorry for how you're feeling. This must be really tough. How can I help? Is a much more empathetic and helpful way to speak and to a friend or someone you know who's going through infertility. As I mentioned before, just being there to sit and listen, giving them space to talk if they want to, really hearing them, trying not to relate it back to your own experiences. That can also be quite dismissive. Not saying, I mean, on one hand, it's helpful to have some relatability and say, yes, I've been through this, and it's really wonderful if you've been through your own infertility journey, but also allowing a space for them to tell their story and to feel heard without maybe personalizing it about you. I think also remembering the physical and financial aspects of infertility. People may, there's a lot. There's a lot of bodily changes and a lot of physical impacts when maybe trying for a baby. Maybe they're doing IVF. There's a lot of kind of side effects that can come with IVF. physical side effects. So, you know, maybe it's offering to take them to an appointment or drive them home. Maybe it's offering to cook them dinner if they maybe don't feel up for it. So I think just be, you know, those things can be really helpful. Doing their shopping, for example, if they're not feeling up for it. Also, one thing to note is maybe, you know, finding them support if you feel like your friend or somebody you know is really struggling. Maybe, you know, talking to them about, hey, like, you know, this is something that I know my other friend has tried, or, you know, have you thought about professional help, or have you thought about, you know, going researching on these websites, having just, you know, maybe doing some research of your own. And if you find that, you know, offering that as a support system can be helpful, giving them that support. So one thing that I found that was really awesome was this website called Peanut. I'm not sure if you saw that in your research, Ames, but it's this app and it's a community of women who share kind of space and have space for each other to talk about their infertility and struggles. And I thought that was really cool, a cool resource that if you're really wanting to help a friend, pointing them in that direction could be a great start. What about you, Ames? Anything to add?
Wow, I think you have pretty much covered it. The only couple of tips I would add to that is, please do not give advice. Please do not give unsolicited advice. It is likely that your loved one has already tried everything under the sun and they are doing all the research and speaking to all of the specialists that they need to be speaking to. Instead, listen, be their friend. Check in with how they're feeling. Please do not give unsolicited advice. That's not helpful. Ask what they're needing. Because I think it is such a unique experience, we can often be paralyzed not knowing what to do or say. So then we just say nothing because we feel like, oh gosh, I don't want to say the wrong thing. I don't want it to come out, you know, poorly. I don't want to offend them. So express with that sensitivity and that care that you have. And instead, what you can do is you can say, hey, I'm really feeling for what you're going through. What is the best way for me to be able to support you? What do you need from me to be a friend? I would really love to be there for you. And be curious around, yeah, what is it like that you're going through? And sometimes that can be the best way that we're able to support someone. But I agree, Kat, I think everything that you just mentioned, that was a really, really thorough how to help someone and really lovely. I think support groups on Facebook, people going through shared experience and connecting that way can also be helpful when we are feeling a little bit isolated and alone, but absolutely. I think one thing that you mentioned, Kat, that I agree and I think will be really helpful is maybe sometimes doing a little bit of your own research and informing yourself, understanding what infertility is if you're close to someone that's going through it, so that you can deepen your understanding around what it is like and what it's about, just so that you're feeling a little bit more confident. And if it is something that is also weighing on you, getting your own support if you're supporting someone and this feels like really heavy, or you've, you know, got other experiences of loss, or you're also going through your own mental health difficulties and this is a little bit triggering for you in some way, making sure that you're also looking after yourself.
Absolutely. All right, Ames, talk to me. If you are experiencing this, if you're listening to this episode and you are hopefully feeling less alone, I think that was certainly a goal that we had when maybe doing this episode, is that we're normalizing a lot of those emotional responses to experiencing infertility. But Ames, what would you recommend for someone who is listening to this and is really relating to this, for some support for themselves?
First and foremost, of course, you are not alone. There are people out there that can help you and support you. I would really encourage you to see a therapist that specializes in fertility issues. This can be a really wonderful resource to access because it is a non-judgmental safe space to share your story and process what you're going through, to move through grief. I would also suggest couples counseling, as well as your own individual therapy, because couples counseling will allow you as a couple to maybe work through some of those conflicting responses and experiences. So it might help you understand if you are coming into conflict or there is some tension there, it might be a really nice safe place for you to understand what each other is experiencing. That can be really, really helpful. I think also stress management will be the only other thing that I'll add. I think having a really good stress management toolkit to reduce stress wherever you can, because there is already so much going on, really looking after stress. So all of those things like movement, sleep, or obviously outside any dietary lifestyle changes that you will need to implement in relation to infertility treatments, really looking after stress, especially around the holidays. So be purposeful and intentional around your energy, around how much you can psychologically absorb when you're reaching your limit. Find a quiet space to self-care and manage stress. I think that's really crucial.
And so helpful, because I know for so many couples who go through something like IVF or other assistive reproductive strategies, hormones can be really, really up and down. And hormones, as we've, we always herald on about AIMS, hormones can have a huge impact on our ability to regulate, emotionally regulate. So going back to those basics, sleep, as AIMS was saying, food, exercise, movement, self-care will be so helpful in just regulating, regulating that nervous system, regulating those hormones in a way that's natural. I'm sure there's your medical team will give you some support around that, but just be mindful that the big drastic changes in hormones or the hormone dysregulation will have an impact on your mood. We always mention those basics will be a great place to start, but as Aim said, therapy as well. And just validation that you're not silly, you're not dramatic, you're not exaggerating. What you're going through is really, really excruciating pain and loss, and you have every right to feel all the feels, whether you are experiencing just low moods and just not wanting to get out of bed, to isolation, to anger, to all of the things we've mentioned. These are all such valid responses to infertility, and you're not alone. It's just finding your people that you can relate to will be really helpful as well.
Really, really good points, Kat. I'm really hoping that this episode has not only shed some light on the psychological effects of infertility, but also helps those struggling to feel a little bit less alone, or if you know someone that is really struggling, maybe gives you a little bit more understanding, insight, and some helpful general tips that allows you to feel a little bit more confident. But I think that is all we have time for today.
Yes, a long episode. I hope that was helpful. Thank you so much, Ames, for sharing your beautiful wisdom as always.
Ditto, Katniss.
We will be back probably for our last ep of the year, maybe. We're so just lax, not sure what we're doing. Might be the last episode of the year, might not, who knows. Not sure what we'll be talking about, but we'll be back in your ears in 2 weeks' time, maybe exploring the other part of this.
Maybe.
Thank you so much for tuning in. We appreciate your support. We probably don't say this enough, but appreciate every single one of you who listens and tunes in every fortnight. We appreciate you so much. If you want to find out more, we are on Instagram at The Psychology Sisters, and our online practice is at The Psych Collaborative. We will see you guys on there, but if not, you'll hear from us in 2 weeks' time.
Bye.
Thanks so much for tuning in to today's episode. If you're not already, please follow us on Instagram at The Psychology Sisters. We are also now providing online psychological sessions. For more information, please follow us at The Psych Collaborative. See you next time.